This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this week's episode of The After Show. And yes, we did actually forget to do last week's episode, Review of the Week. So this week we are going to start off with two reviews of the week. So these two people will be able to get the reviews down and...
Review of the fortnight.
Yeah, review of the fortnight. Double. Okay, so first one I've got here is... Okay, so first review that I've got here is from Troy Rose. Now, it's very long, so I won't read the whole thing, but he does mention in one here, he goes, "They're entertaining, lighthearted, and informative shows are always packed with the lols, and they will quickly make you want to hit the juicy subscribe button faster than Crazy Eyes Delta Goodrum swinging her chair wildly around to The Voice." So I appreciate that description. And the next one will be from S.A. Stell. "Ben Pekulski podcast. To score Ben Pekulski on your podcast is a massive score, but for Lockie to gain insight into not only his training, but his values and his views on parenting, business, finance, focus, present, and life in general was so informative and timely. I've listened to it twice already." So, S.A. Stell and Troy Rose, if you guys can send in the booster program you would like, the deadlift, the bench press, or the squat, to orders@themindmuscleproject.com. That's orders@themindmuscleproject.com. We will send you that program right back, as well as a digital training journal. So sorry for missing it last week, but let's dive into the show. So I was away on the weekend, and I was in town in Auckland for the UFC. I was excited to go to Auckland because, firstly, I haven't seen my brother's new living situation and wanted to live a day in his life or a weekend in his life, see what the professional athlete life is like. And then also the boys at the gym, two of our coaches are from Auckland as well. So Jody's sort of near Auckland, but goes there enough. And, it's the biggest city in New Zealand, and I've kind of been to the South Islands and stuff. You know, there's more people live in Auckland than the whole of the South Islands?
Yeah. Yes. Unsurprising, because you see no people when you drive.
Yeah.
Dust sheep.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, it was a cool city. It definitely reminded me a lot of Melbourne. The same sort of vibe. And the weather was hot, but then it turned cold very quick. The weather changes very quickly. But we have clear blue skies, and they don't normally get that. Anyway, so... I'm in town for there's two main cards on. There's the Eternal card, which is the Australian promotion, and then there's obviously the UFC on Sunday. So two massive fight events, a lot of fighting. But what I was most curious to see is I got to go there and watch my brother train this sparring, which is quite difficult when guys just sit on the pads and just go to war with each other. And then I got to watch this thing called Spider. Spider is their... The way they talk about it, it's they're repeating an open workout. That's the way they talk about it. They're fucking scared. They know they're about to go through so much pain. It's also another word for it. Some people got is called Shark Tank. Shark Tank's a little bit different. But basically how it works, and this is something I was particularly excited to watch because one of the guys who trains some of his camps at there, who's the world champion now, Alexander Volkanovsky, he said in his interview after he'd won the fight, in the post Octagon Joe Rogan sort of question, he said something along the lines of "Hey, you know, this wasn't that scary of a fight. I was ready for it. What I'm more scared of is Spider, the training." Mm. So he's specifically referring to this style of or this particular workout that they do in prep for a camp. So you don't do it year round.
Is this conditioning or is this?
It's conditioning. Yep. It's conditioning. So I was particularly excited to watch. My brother said, "Hey, we might need some extra bodies." So basically how it works, it's for the guys that are going through it, or going through the Spider. Say, I think there was six or seven of them. Per person going through it, you need about four or five extra bodies to do it. So if there's four or five people, you need an extra 20, 25 bodies, right? So he's like, "Look, come along. You'll just have to do some basic stuff. I've done some basic fighting stuff before." So he's like, "Look, you'll know what to do." This is how savage, because, we were professional CrossFit athletes, but these guys are fucking the real professionals, right? Way more sacrifice. It's absolutely insane. So they support all their boys on the Eternal card, which goes from 3 p.m. to, I think we got out of there about 8:30 p.m. So full night at the casino watching fights, a full day watching fights at the casino. everyone sprints out of there and they're done to the gym to do the spider at 9 p.m., right? Like hardest conditioning workout of the week, keeps you up at night from Monday night. And we get there and the gym is packed, like all the boys show up. Like it's Saturday night, right? In Auckland, like this is the night, it's after the fights, all their guys won. They want to go out, they want to celebrate. No, they go straight to the gym. Even guys who had just fought on that card, like swollen eyes and shit, they've rocked up to the gym to help out. Like there's a camaraderie there that's like unspeakable. And they're in there and they are going fucking ham. Like balls
to the
wall.
Hold on, you've got to explain. So
depending on how many rounds your upcoming fight is. So yep. For most guys, it's three. If you're doing like a championship fight.
Three to five.
Yeah, if you do a championship fight, it's five, yep. Right? So it depends on how many you do. If anyone listening to this knows, Stylebender, Israel Adesanya, is like the middleweight champ. He's got a big fight coming up. And he did five. So yep. His is like way harder. But anyway, most of the guys were doing three, including my brother. And basically it starts as like a pre-fatigue couple of exercises. So they do about four or five different strength and conditioning exercises. One's like this, it's almost like banded punches, yep. Almost, like really fast. And they do like med ball slams, like from their knees. They do a bunch of like kettlebell high pulls. And then they go into like, starts with the strength condition and it finishes with getting wrestle fucked. So basically they just go against the wall and then like five fresh guys just keep trying to tackle them nonstop, right? So they're tackling them for like 30 seconds. They just got to defend. If they get up, they got to get up. If they get taken down, they got to get up straight away. And then fresh guys just launching themselves at you, right? Just trying to like just obliterate you. So they do that and then it's time, you get 1 minute rest. So that's five minutes that replicates a round. The next 5 minutes is like a slightly different variation. It has a bit more bodies involved. So you're doing like these kind of weighted quarter squat things, like hip extensions, jumping lunges. Like you're doing like plyometrics, right, to fatigue your arms and your legs, like hard plyometrics. And then you're going into like carrying bodies around, like lifting guys up, doing takedowns, all this sort of stuff. Anyway, so I'm just in there being your body, right? So I'm just trying to do takedowns and I'm getting taken down. Like you just get up, they take you down, get back up. Get up, take down, get back up. You kind of put a bit of effort in there to make them work harder. Anyway, so they're getting fucking flogged, right? They're getting flogged. But the boys, because they were so fired up from the event they came to, and heaps of the boys won. I think only one guy didn't win. So they won like 9 out of 10 fights. And all those boys are there and these boys are getting ready for their next fight. And man, it's crazy. I've never experienced anything like it because you know these guys are about to go to war. It's different like getting ready for or watching someone go through a CrossFit workout. It's like, what's the worst that's going to happen, right? Fuck, you don't get the score on the leaderboard. You don't go to regionals. Boo-hoo. These guys are going to fucking on TV, the biggest MMA organization in the world, and they are fucking going ham. Like they're screaming at each other, screaming. Anyway, the energy is so sick. Like definitely never experienced an atmosphere like that in my life. Here's the worst part about the whole thing. Didn't know till later when I got home. So I'm in there. I'm obviously in my training gear. That weekend, I got the RecGen tracksuit that I got for us. So pumped. I'm getting compliments left, right, center. Boys are going, dude, that is a sick...
The jacket and pants? Yeah. Matching, yep.
Yeah, the boys are like, dude, that is a sick tracksuit. Where did you get that? Oh, that's so cool. And because it's got these like little different pieces on it that's different to other tracksuits. And so it kind of stands out a bit. And so I'm getting compliments from all these people. I'm like, fuck yeah, this is like the best tracksuit I've ever gotten. It's super lightweight. So I was wearing it in the heat and then in the cold as well. Like it's one of those tracksuits that has the reverse technology. So when you're hot, it keeps you cool. And when you're cold, it keeps you warm.
Yep.
And it was raining a bit there. So it was doubling up as a raincoat. Like it was amazing. I was completely in love with this tracksuit. And so I'm training in the gym. I'm kind of getting thrown around into all the sweat and stuff. It's gross. Like it's seriously gross there. The guys, they get this thing called staff pretty often, which is like the, you know what staff is. Have you had staff?
No, but a bunch of guys in rugby team in America.
Yeah, yeah, would have got it.
You don't seem to get it in Australia. Like I'd never heard of it really until I went there and it's rife in America.
Right. I think, yeah, it's just bad hygiene.
Yes.
Bad hygiene because you're just rolling around with so many bodies, especially guys that have staff.
I had to share a bed with a guy with staff and I was like up all night.
Yeah, no, it's not good. As long as you don't have any open wounds or anything, you'll be fine.
But you always have open wounds.
And in fighting, they've all got little things, right? So you got to wash really diligently, like with antibacterial soap when you get home. Anyway, so you've got that all over all the mats. You've got all the sweaty bodies of all the dudes combined. And it's just like, I was walking home after there in my training gear. And dude, like the stench coming off my body was like next level. Like it was some of the worst stench I've ever smelled in my life. And I think it's like just a mix of like staff and disease and just sweaty bodies and just all combined and festering together. And so I don't have time to wash my clothes while I'm over there. I'm just over there for a weekend. I fold it all up, put it in my bag, put it in a, you know, its own sealed section, whatever. Go home, put all my washing in, including my tracksuit for the weekend. Turn the washing machine on, normal cycle, everything. The dirt and the sweat and whatever filth from that session in those clothes, right? And it wasn't even my sweat. I wasn't even that sweaty. Soaked into the tracksuit. And all the white areas on the tracksuit went yellow. Ruined. Completely ruined. I tried to wash it like four times. I tried everything. I tried like, you know, the Oxy Action nappy sand. I tried like rubbing it and soaking it. Dude, it is like, it's fucking wrecked. It like broke my heart.
It's wrecked,
like, dude, it's wrecked for a generation. It was so, so heartbreaking. I'm going to have to get another one because I liked it so much, but oh God, it just ruined my fucking day yesterday.
I would say for anyone that gets like an insight into professional sports, that is like exactly, like you always, it looks so glamorous when you watch it on TV and stuff. And then whenever, like I remember once we went out and we were doing rowing and the Australian squad was getting ready for the Olympics, and it's so similar. Like it looks so awesome when you watch TV because whatever, you just don't see it. But in the background, A, it stinks. Always stinks. Like, it's just
so
just
smelly.
The smelliest place so on smelly. The planet, yeah. Those athletes, because they're just always sweating. And yeah, it's so different when you see them like train really hard compared to compete really hard. I think when you compete really hard, you just always get that extra boost, right? You finish and you like get this bit of extra energy. Whereas like, I remember watching them and like, these are like tough guys. Like, they're not like pretending they're in pain. And like, they had to get, they would do time trials and they would get physically lifted off the rowing seat.
Yeah.
Like physically lifted. Like the support staff would come in, they'd unstrap them. And they'd pull their legs and like carry them like how you would carry someone like in like World War One, like someone's been shot and you'd carry them, they'd drag them.
Dragging them off.
That is how they would take them off. They'd like lift two legs at a time, place them on the ground.
Fuck.
I'm like, it's never as good as it looks.
It's and as well because a lot of them, you know, they're not getting paid, right?
So well, that's the thing is, and whenever you go, most of these people, like most of those people at that rowing thing, weren't going to make the Olympics.
Yeah.
And I'm sure with the fighting, most of them, no one's ever going to know who they are.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like, this particular squad is, like, very high level. But, yeah, there's obviously a lot of upcoming guys in the pro team. There's quite a few guys that have already made it. They're in the UFC. There's another guys that are signed to other leagues and stuff. But, you know, they're not living glamorous lives. Yeah. Like, they're not balling like crazy. Obviously, Adesanya is a bit of an exception. But in all sports, it's like the 1% of the 1%. They all have jobs, right? They all have to, like, you know, work a food job or because they're just trying to pick. The work doesn't matter. The work is just money to support the training. So it can't be too disruptive to the training. Like some of the guys did doors, like they were security guards, but it didn't work because it was affecting their sleep and they couldn't recover. So they're all just
really... Surely the last thing you'd want to do if you're a professional fighter is have to fight in your day.
Yeah. Or break up fights, right?
I think you wouldn't want to do it.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're on like really, really tight budgets. Like I even knew when I went there, they're like, all right, cool, we can eat out, but like it has to be under $20. Yeah. And I was like, fuck, like they're so strict and they're worried about every single dollar, you know, because they have that stress. And they can't buy nice things or whatever. And they just, you know, if they get an Uber or whatever, like it's a big deal. Mm. And so I guess it was kind of nice. I could just go in and, you know, they could just eat out and I could just pay for their stuff and they wouldn't bother them. And they were really enjoying that. But you realize there that they're all in. Like, you know, I was sitting there with my brother having a conversation. I was telling someone else this, like, you know, when he went over there, it was different when he lived in Sydney, right? It was, and he was like, you know, he was trying to make it as a professional fighter, but he's still young, still like, you know, 23, 24. And you're still thinking to yourself, oh, you know, if it doesn't happen now, like maybe you can step out and, you know, you can start your career. It's not too late or whatever. And then when he made the move to New Zealand, I guess in the back of my head, because we'd never really spoken about it, it was like, okay, are you going to, is this, you know, could he be here forever until his career's over? Is he taking his career seriously? Like, is this just a bit of a holiday to test it out or whatever? So when I went over there on the weekend and we sat down and we were just like sitting on the top of Mount Eden, which is like the high point in Auckland, you know, I was speaking to him and I was like, you know, how long do you plan on staying in New Zealand? And he's like, until my professional career is over. And the way he spoke about it is like, this is it. Like, this is what he wants to do. He's all in on it. And you know, from the outside, like you said, it looks kind of gross. It looks hard. It looks kind of miserable, suffering all of the time. But in all that they're going through, that is like they're enjoying themselves so much. Like, I guess on the day that, that you're tired, you know, you have injuries, but they are doing what they love. You know, all those guys that are there because people from all across the world have traveled to train at that gym and live in Auckland and all from all across the country as well. And, you know, this is everything for them. And they're way happier than someone that, you know, has $1 million a year, you know, and works for a corporation they don't even love. Like, they are. And I'm thinking to myself, like, man, it would be sick. Like, I have no desire to do this, but in terms of how you're enjoying it, like, these are going to be the memories that you tell your kids about. You know, it's like, yeah, I was, you know, up and coming, you know, we're doing crazy days in the gym, and, like, you know, we're going out for feeds afterwards. Like, they're just in a mad family that's training all the time. Like, it's the number one thing. And it's just really different to, obviously, my life, obviously, where all the focus and energy is going in towards, like, the career and the business, and all his energy is going in towards fighting and making a career out of it. The good thing is that fighting is a legitimate sport that you can make a lot of money out of. Whereas, like, I would say CrossFit is not really, like, a legitimate sport, except for, like, two people, three, four people. Whereas for fighting, thousands of people can make a legitimate career out of it. So it's a lot better. But yeah, it was just, like, really cool to go there and see him. He's like, this is it. Like, this is all in. This is everything I'm trying to do. And this is, like, my life. And I was like, fuck, this is sick. And so in my head, I'm like, cool. Your brother lives in Auckland now. Like, he's not on a trip to Auckland, and he'll be back soon. Like, this is where he lives now. And if you want to go see him, like, you got to get on a plane. So yeah, that was pretty cool. It's a good weekend.
It must still be, though, something like fighting. It's a huge winner takes all sport, right? Though, right? Because it's individual.
Yeah.
So it's not like there's, you know, you've got to be a really big name to do well individually.
Yeah.
It's not like levels of teams that you can work your way up that support you.
No, not really. No, I mean, there's all different leagues you can join, which makes it a little bit easier. So, like, if you don't make the UFC, there's still heaps of other organizations you can go in now, which are all paying really well. So you can have a long career.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is good. But obviously, it's brutal on the body compared to a lot of other careers. So the tracksuit disaster was obviously horrific, but I did try something recently, which I've been wanting to for a while. We're obviously always experimenting with different focus and nootropics and stuff. You saw me, like, overpay for L-theanine the other day, but I thought I would just share this with the listeners because it is actually quite a useful combination, I find. Now, I don't know if anyone has... The L-theanine's in peak rest, right?
Yep. Yeah. Rest and focus.
Rest and focus.
It's a sedative. So, it's like if you can have it... People have it with caffeine.
Yeah.
Like, take the edge off. But if you have it without caffeine, then it makes you pretty sleepy.
Right. Yeah. So, L-theanine's it's an amino acid. Mm. And combined with caffeine, it gives it a really smooth kind of uptake. Yeah. I find that when I have too much caffeine sometimes, especially get a little bit, like, anxious and jittery, my mouth gets a bit dry. I don't know if anyone else has experienced this. Maybe you get it, like, on your second coffee. But if you combine it with L-theanine, what I find is you don't race up and peak as hard, and you don't come down as hard as well. So I find that the crash of caffeine after a while, because I had been drinking a lot recently, when I say a lot, it's like two or three coffees a day, was really affecting my ability to work in the afternoons. And so basically decided to start combining L-theanine. And yeah, I don't know how... It's half a teaspoon, so I don't know how many grams that is.
You should,
like,
check.
Maybe two capsules?
Yeah, because you generally want to get the ratio quite well, like 2-1 or whatever ratio you want to work with the caffeine.
Right. Yeah. Well, I haven't been checking that ratio, but it's been much better, I find. It's like just the effect I want from caffeine without all the negative stuff that comes on top of it, like the jitters and anxious, dry mouth.
I think that's why people often like green tea, because you get L-theanine in green tea, so I think it's already got some of that effect.
And naturally, L-theanine's in green tea. Okay. Yeah, maybe that's why. All right, sick. Well, before we jump into the listener questions, we've got some feedback for you guys that I think someone asked about activated nutrients. They wanted to know if it was a good combination or they wanted a code for it or something. Anyway.
Man, this guy asked, he's like in the context of the carnivore episode we had.
Oh, okay. You want to know about activated nutrients. Yeah, the carnivore episode was obviously very controversial. I think a few people messaged us in and they were wondering, oh, what's the deal here? You know, I'm convinced, like, are vegetables dangerous? Yes, no. And basically, we just said, like, look, I think the answer lies, as quite often does, in the middle somewhere, right? We're talking about the two extremes here. We're talking about vegan, which is all vegetables, all plants, and we're talking about meat, which is no vegetables, no plants. And I think the combination in the middle is the perfect combination. I think all the benefits that he spoke about of meat, you can get when you combine meat with vegetables, and all the benefits from vegetables you can get with meat. And I think that carnivore is definitely more extreme than vegan, for sure, only eating meat. So I would imagine that you would get more adverse health effects long term. Obviously, people were following Joe Rogan and heard him talk positively about the carnivore diet, but he's only been on it for a month. He only went on it for a month, and he's like, it's not really sustainable for him. So I just think with all these things, yeah, you just got to realize that people are going to feel really good. They're going to have that honeymoon period on any diet, on keto, on vegan, on paleo, on carnivore. But long term, you are going to slowly deplete different minerals and different nutrients, different vitamins inside your body. It doesn't always happen in a month. It might take a year. It might take 2 years. It might take 3 years. But at that point, you've probably given yourself some pretty adverse health effects, which will take a while to undo. So my advice with this sort of stuff, and just from my experience with our clients, experience with ourselves as well, is that just combine a little bit of everything, and that's where you're going to get the most benefit. But just, you know, on the points that what's Carnivore MD's Instagram, what's
Paul Saladino. Paul,
yeah, on Paul's points is pay attention to, like, the message I got from that is, yeah, pay attention to certain plant foods which can upset you. And I've really gotten to the point now where I think anything that's like oats, what's the oat?
Wheat?
Wheat? Is it wheat? Yeah. Like wheat, yeah, unless it's sort of in like a sourdough bread, does not sit well with me. Like all the wheat cereals and that now that I used to eat, like porridge and stuff, they don't make me tired necessarily, but they definitely give me gas, like badly. So I just kind of avoid those now. But yeah, like dairy and eggs and stuff, like that all sits really well with me. And so I'm just paying more attention now. I think the message was pay more attention to the plant foods that upset your system, and try and cut those out. Because yeah, like not all plant foods are going to sit well with you.
Yeah. I think it probably sounds like unlikely every single plant food is going to sit well with you.
Yeah.
It's probably most people have one or two, then.
Yeah.
Probably some people have more. I think that one interesting point people did seem to miss a little bit from the podcast, well, my understanding was that, you know, he was more recommending carnivore as an intervention diet. He's like, hey, if you have like these sort of problems, this could be a really good diet for you to try. Like, contrary to popular belief, you still get, you know, most of the minerals and vitamins that you need because it's really nutritious and it could be really healthy. And it's a great way to like find out maybe what's not working with you, because he had like some stomach issues of their own.
Yeah.
Whereas that is like, it's a different proposition to just like, hey, this is the best diet for everybody.
Yeah.
You should jump on, which you might often see more on like the vegan side.
Right.
Not many of them are like, hey, you should just try this if you're having troubles with your diet and you're not, and you want to cut out a lot of foods and then go back to something as a middle ground. It's not usually how they pitch it.
Right.
It's more like, hey, this is just the best diet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's a big difference between those two.
Yeah. And I think the ethics around, you know, obviously having to kill animals to eat them makes, you know, the emotional attachment to the vegan diet a lot stronger than the carnivore diet. He's not like, no one's getting upset about saving, you know, sorry, no one's getting emotionally attached to plants and then like, dude, we're saving all the plants by just only eating animals. So because you have that on the vegan side, I think obviously, it's just a more of an emotional sort of connection to a diet, which can be confusing, right? Because now you're kind of mixing two different worlds. You're mixing kind of the ethical side of things with the health side of things, and you're just getting a bit confused here because, you know, are you on a diet? No, I'd say a lot of vegans obviously have made the ethical choice not to kill animals to eat, which is, you know, you can do whatever you want and there's no judgment here. And, you know, everyone should have the right to make their own decisions in this stuff. But, you know, when it comes to your health, I think that you have to put yourself first. I mean, you don't want to, I think a lot of people hang on to the fact that they don't want to eat animals, you know, which, like I said, I'd support that, but they sacrifice their own health because of that. Whereas I think if the carnivore diet, because, or any other diet, right, that has, you know, ill health effects, but isn't, you know, ethical in any way, it's not like you're more ethical because you choose paleo or keto, right? People go, man, I'm actually feeling really shit. I don't feel good. There's some like weird symptoms going on. My nails are falling out, or like, you know, I've got no libido or whatever. They pull out of the diet faster. Whereas I think because of that ethical side of things, vegans stay in the diet longer. They go, no, well, I just can't bring myself to eat animals. And I met I'm really good friends with a guy who was, you know, vegan for 17 years. And he always said, look, you know, I really want to be able to do this, but my health comes first. And if it comes between me and the animals, like I'm going to choose myself, because, you know, healthy humans are the most important thing for this planet. And, you know, he started eating meat. He feels fantastic now. And he would like to get back to a point where he can slowly wean himself off meat. But right now, his health was deteriorating. And so it was just, he didn't want to be on the toilet, you know, 17 times a day for years to come. So he put meat in his diet and he feels fantastic. And it just speaks more to the individuality. It's where we get all lost here. You know, we're all thinking that we need to choose one side or the other. No, you like you need to make your own choices. Mm. And like it just takes time working with lots of clients and seeing your body evolve and your body change that you realize that, you know, the information we're giving you guys, you should interpret it and try little self-experiments on yourself because only you're going to know what's best for you. As much advice as we give, as much science that's out there, at the end of the day, if there's really good science on kale and you eat kale and it bloats you and it gives you gas and you feel tired when you eat it, kale's not good for you. No matter how much science there is out there, that science isn't testing you. Only you can test you. But what I will say, looking at background to like a plant supplement like Activated Nutrients, for example, I'd say it's very unlikely that someone would get the issues because I think a lot of the issues come from the breaking down of the different anti-nutrients and fiber complexes that are in plants. All that's already taken care of. Obviously, it's a supplement. So, you know, you've broken down a lot of those different elements. Yeah, like I haven't really heard anyone that's got issues from. The only thing I hear is that people makes them go to the toilet really.
Yeah, if
really
you have quick. Too much.
With yeah.
The 3 teaspoon day, I found that out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think the good thing about supplements is actually far easier to test how you go on it. Just more like you just put it in, you just have it for 5 days, then don't have it for 5 days. It's like really easy, you know? Yeah. Other foods can be more difficult because you like plan on not eating it and then you like end up eating it because it's like it's on the plate.
Yeah.
Or it's like, hey, which food is it? It's super easy to test something like this. So I generally find with supplements, I'm like, hey, it's not too much of a worry. Because you just try it.
Mm.
But I haven't ever actually heard that.
Yeah. And again, like I was getting, I think if you read my daily email, you would have read that I was sleeping on an air mattress the last 2 days before I left to Auckland because Evshi was sick and I didn't want to catch it. And then I woke up that morning, I was leaving to fly and I was like, man, I'm starting to feel sick. And I was like, damn it, you know, it's going to be horrible because my whoop score was dropping a little bit. I knew I was not really crossing major time zones. There's a 2 hour difference, but I was like, oh, I don't really know what my schedule is going to be like. I don't know if I'm going to sleep well. I'm like, you know what? I'll just take Activated Nutrients with me. I'll have one scoop in the morning, one scoop in the evening. And I mean, I'm not going to say it's all Activated Nutrients, but I did not get sick. So I was very stoked. And I was definitely getting sick. I had a sore throat that morning.
But you've got staph infection from the fires.
My clothes have staph infection. My tracksuit has a staph infection. So if you guys want Activated Nutrients, head over to activatednutrients.com. And then the code is OfferMMP. You guys can pick up that deal. All right, listen to question number one.
Okay. So number one, Grant Sathwaite. Is the deadlift booster or any booster program good as a standalone program? No.
Well, I think it depends. I think it depends. Because our assistant from the Philippines, he tried the deadlift booster for the first time. And he's like crippling sore.
Yep.
I assume that's the only training that he did. For that week. I don't think he... Unless he just did some walking and running and stuff.
I mean, he's in the back end of our account, so maybe he gets free access to all the booster programs.
He definitely does. He definitely does. I think that it just depends. I think it's... obviously, it's enough training for a real beginner. Like, if someone has never lifted weights before and they want to train, you know, 25 minute sessions a week, it's enough training. Like, I would give this to my parents. I would give it to...
It's enough, but if I was to give someone the best standalone program... I would make it more well-rounded.
Of course. Yeah, of course. But can it stand alone as a program? Yeah, it can. It's just obviously only going to improve like sort of your, you know, if it's your deadlift, you're really only going to train your deadlift. If it's your bench, you're really only going to train your bench. So as you said, as a well-rounded program, it's not. It's not a well-rounded program.
I mean, if you want to get good at one lift, you can do, you also can do more. I remember Mike Wadango is like an old guest we had on. And back in the day, back when I had two functioning pecs, I wanted to get my bench up hard and I did one of his bench press programs.
Mm.
It was like, hey, this is going to get your bench up really quick. And man, we were benching 3 times a week, twice a day.
So oh, wow.
You'd bench in the AM and you'd bench in the PM.
Yeah, right. Sounds like a sick program.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if the best standalone program probably from all those, I'd say is probably the squat booster.
Yeah.
Just because you get lunges in there and you get back squats and front squats and sandbag stuff as well. So you do kind of have a more of a full body workout. But I think if you're looking for overall kind of performance, athletic development and aesthetics, then you'd probably want our new programs that are coming out. So we are releasing the programs, I want to say like 2 weeks from now.
Yeah.
And they're full body programs.
2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah. So we've got a strength program. We've got an endurance program coming out. And we have a aesthetic program as well. So very excited for them.
Yeah.
We've had, man, 4 people contributing to the development of these programs. Raph and I are overseeing it. Yeah. And two of our coaches who are far more qualified than we are to write programs are in there. And we're just kind of working as a team to develop them. We're very excited for those. So those will be out soon. those full body programs. We've been obviously mentioning it for a while. We just wanted to do it right before we release them.
Nice. Second question, we touched on it. After listening to this week's carnivore episode, I'm curious if you guys plan on changing anything in your own nutrition based on the evidence presented. One thing I mentioned is it's with evidence. It's, you know, on a podcast, I don't really validate the evidence, right? I'm just listening and I'm making my own opinions, but I can't like validate everything somebody says on a show,
right?
Which is sometimes what people seem to expect. Mm. But usually the way I look at it is like if he's claiming that, say like all vegetables are bad, I would expect like pretty extraordinary evidence to really be able to show that.
Yeah.
Because for so long we've eaten vegetables and most people think we should eat vegetables and like, yeah. you know, the yeah. general consensus is like a lot of vegetables are really good for you.
Yeah.
So I would be like, hey, the pedestal of what you need to do to convince me to not eat them is like unbelievably high. Mm. Probably too high that there was nothing he could say on that show
yeah.
that would make me banish vegetables yeah. just because it's like, you know, extraordinary claim, like you need extraordinary evidence. Whereas like my bar for what you need to convince me that like red meat is good for you, it's pretty low. Just because I'm like, hey, we've been eating red meat for so long. It's like amongst human history.
You mean red meat is bad for you? Or?
Yeah, it's bad for you.
Oh, so you said so, good for yeah. you. Yeah.
Also, sorry, just to prove to me that it's good for you, I don't need that much evidence.
Oh, okay.
You know, I didn't need like extraordinary evidence on that show. Be like, no, that's it. I'm like, hey, because, well, just if you look at how long we've been eating meat for and how many healthy people around the world for so long have eaten meat, I look at it the other way. I'm like, hey, I need like pretty extraordinary evidence here to show like good quality red meat is not good for you.
Yeah.
So like, I think just the way I put like that burden of evidence is really different. So in that show, I'm like, yeah, it was really interesting. You know, did I run out and like throw all the vegetables in like my parents' kitchen into the bin to like save them from instant death? No. I do want to give something like it a try. I'm actually waiting until we have, because I'm doing more endurance training at the moment. I do want to see if it could work. But I want to wait until we have Zach Bitter on the show, mm-hmm. which is next week, because I've heard him on Joe Rogan and he does like kind of like a carnivore diet, but he uses some carbs around his training and competitions and stuff.
Yeah.
So, I'm going to wait till the episode we record it next week. And if that's good and it's like a protocol that I think is sustainable, then I might give it a go for a few weeks.
Yeah, I think I don't think I've changed anything. If anything, I was more held to what I'm currently doing. So I kind of reinforced already what I was doing is the right thing. And I had thought that for a while, I probably needed more vegetables in my diet. Mm. So I have like a massive green smoothie in the morning. I blend up heaps of kale and spinach and berries and obviously activated nutrients and some other stuff in there, protein powder. So that's all in there. That's a decent amount of vegetables. It's not crazy. And then every now and like through the meals that I have through the day, there's like a little bit of vegetables. It's not heaps. It's not like a whole bowl of broccoli or something. And then for dinner, I'll steam some vegetables as well. So it's pretty much vegetables like 2.5 times a day. And I think that after listening to that podcast, I felt like I didn't need to add, because I felt like for a while, I'm like, fuck, I should really like kind of double, triple my vegetable intake. I felt like and you know, if you'd ask me, how do I feel? I feel really good. Like, I don't feel like I need more vegetables. I should probably go and get some tests and stuff, because how you feel is not always accurate. But everything seems to be going really well. And I do eat a lot of animal products. I'm having meat 3 or 4 times a day, having dairy. A lot of dairy, a lot of eggs. And I think it just really reinforced me like, hey, eating lots of animal products, if it sits well with you, like, is a good and a healthy thing.
For sure. I mean, I felt much better. For a time, I was the same thing. I was like, hey, just the more veggies, the better. And because I have a big appetite already, I was eating a lot.
Yeah.
And I think it was just too much fiber. I don't think it was anything like, you know, sickening in the vegetables, because I just cut back on the volume and I felt so much better.
Right.
And like my stools were way better. So I don't think the veggies were so bad. It was just like the amount of fiber.
Yeah.
Particularly if you have like potatoes and sweet potatoes and stuff, like it gets out of control.
And I think having like a greens powder full of, or a multivitamin or whatever, it does help cover a lot of the bases that you might miss in your diet as well. So it does plug a lot of those holes. But yeah, I mean, I think the only foods that I'll really add, to be honest, is just more animal foods. Like, I'm going to have different types of fish now. I'm going to try and add in a few more different fish. And then I'm also going to try and add in some more different types of nuts, because I'm not really having enough nuts, which I guess is plant food.
You know, one follow-up I would like to have for them, because I'm getting my omega-3 tested, and I would like to know, if someone does carnivore, they don't really recommend fish on that diet, which I noticed. Like, he pretty much only eats red meat, that guy.
Yeah.
I looked at his recommended diets that he has in his book, and there's no fish in it.
What about chicken?
It's not really like, it's really just meat.
Red meat
and organ meats.
Okay.
And fattier cuts of meat. So we didn't get to dive into that stuff, but I would be interested to hear why.
We actually are going to get Simon Hill from Plant Proof back on the show. He wants to try and debunk some of that stuff.
Which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Yeah. Okay, A. Schultz, 84. How much endurance training will take away from muscle gain? Example, most athletes that compete in endurance-based events don't seem to carry a decent amount of muscle like cyclists and triathletes. That is for sure. Is it possible to have a strength program and a decent amount of muscle and still compete? Train longer domains, 2 to 3 hours once or twice a week? Is it just a matter of being in a calorie surplus?
Yeah, good question. So I can't remember what the documentary was called, but we rated it really poorly. But it was the guy that did 52 marathons in 52 days or something.
Yeah, Iron Cowboy. 50 and 50.
If you watch him, I mean, it's just one example, but he's jacked. Like, he's shredded.
He was so shredded by the end.
But his upper body's still jacked.
Yeah.
Like, this dude can do pull-ups, bench press, all that sort of stuff. Look, I think that, you know, triathletes and marathon runners and that, they look the way they do for a reason. It's because they are optimizing their body type to be the best for that sport.
They don't do weights.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty simple, yeah.
Yeah, or they might do a little bit for rehab, you know. But generally, they're not trying to build tons of muscle because it doesn't serve them, right? Muscle is such an energy-intensive tissue. It requires so much, so many calories to operate it that if you're trying to build a body that's calorie efficient, a body with a lot of muscle is calorie inefficient, right? It needs heaps of fuel to get going, right? Whereas someone who's really skinny and doesn't require a ton of calories to perform at a really high rate, it's better because your body's more efficient. It can do more with small amount of energy. And if your event is like 5, 6, 7, 10, 15 hours or however long this shit goes for, like, you need maximum efficiency. When you put 10 calories in your body, you want that to be as used as efficiently as possible. Whereas someone with a ton of muscle, you put that into a strongman, that shit evaporates instantly, right? And that's why they eat 7,000-8,000 calories, because they have so much muscle.
Yeah, it's a food equation. Chris Gethin, who we had on the show, he did an Ironman as like a bodybuilder.
Yeah.
May have been some steroid use, I'm not sure. But regardless, I mean, he was obviously huge when he did it. And if you look at, what's the guy that swam around Great Britain?
Oh, Ross Edgley.
I mean, he clearly, if you just watch that Red Bull documentary, gained weight throughout the process.
Yeah.
It was like pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Obviously, he was eating a lot. So it really is just a food equation. The thing I will say is that what tends to happen is that it's so time intensive when you do that stuff that it drains a lot of your energy and you tend to just not...
What's time intensive?
I'm saying like, 3 hours of endurance training.
Oh, right.
You know, that stuff just takes heaps of time.
Yeah.
It does sap your energy. You then start to probably bring less energy to your weights training. You probably start doing less weights training in general. And very quickly, I see these guys with the best intentions. They're like, I'm only doing like 1 hour a week.
Yeah.
Less than an hour a week. So then very quickly, if you're doing lots of endurance training and almost no weights, over time, there's probably going to be a recomposition away from the muscle mass
for sure
that you carry. Particularly, like what I noticed with my change was like particularly around the areas where you just don't really use those muscles. So like around my shoulders, I think I definitely lost the muscle. Was just doing so much pressing in CrossFit. And then if I do more endurance, I'm still doing legs. I'm like running and cycling and lifting weights. But in some of those muscles that really don't get touched from that stuff, I think the muscle does evaporate a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's mostly a food equation.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that you can, definitely do it. My advice would be to try and just keep as much of your muscle mass as possible, because once you are overdoing that sport, or maybe you don't take it as seriously, or the training drops back a little bit, you don't want to be in such a deficit of how much muscle you've lost that you have to spend all your 100%. Time rebuilding it. So it's better to build up, I'd say, as much muscle as possible, and then try and eat to sustain it, strength training to sustain it. But if you lose a little bit, that's not such a bad thing, but don't let yourself wither away, because muscle, look, at the end of the day, the body of a triathlete and a marathon runner, like at the higher level, it's an unhealthy person. It's a weak, like, that person is designed just to run long distances. I wouldn't say they're very healthy because they're not that strong, right? They can't carry a lot of weight. Their legs aren't super strong through a full range of motion. And obviously, I'm not speaking for all of them, but for quite a lot of them, you know, that they don't know how to squat arsenograss properly with weight. And that doesn't serve you later on in life, you know, 100%. Having weak knees, having bad hips, like that stuff's not good for you, for your longevity. So just think in the back of your mind, if you're not trying to be the best triathlete, marathon runner in the world, just be a little bit more muscular, right?
If you get stiff and lose your muscle, you've gone seriously less athletic.
Yeah. Process. Yeah. So just kind of, consider that.
Okay. This could be more of an in-the-back question, but Coco Nixo, how do you guys manage how your customers talk about your gym? I was wondering, because your best ad is when people talk about you for you. And I remember doing CrossFit when it wasn't well established. I just wouldn't talk about my box to my friends because it was too complicated to explain.
Did you break your new phone already?
No, it's my old phone.
Oh, what happened to your phone?
That's K-Round 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you carry around two phones?
Oh, one's over there, one's here.
I don't know. What's the purpose?
One makes phone calls, one doesn't interrupt me with any phone calls. So I can just be focused on my listener
that's,
questions.
That's good.
No one can,
I'll take that.
No one can interrupt me. Since you guys have now an even wider stance on training, I'm guessing your customers have trouble or even refrain from talking about what they do for training because it's cumbersome to explain to someone who's not in it.
Mm.
It's a pretty good question because I've been speaking to quite a few of my members recently about this. And one of the questions I ask when I reach out to them is, hey, like, how do you, for the ones that are enjoying it, how do you describe the gym to your friends?
Mm.
Reflecting on this now, none of them talk about the training.
Yeah,
they do have trouble. Like, they do really have trouble. Like, that's why they like labels. That's why labels are such a big thing. Because when you're like a CrossFit gym, like, oh, it's CrossFit, bro. And like, the other person doesn't even 100%. Know what CrossFit is, but it just makes it easy to explain it. I think they do have a lot more trouble explaining it now because we don't have that, like, label.
Mm.
People are just desperate for labels. But yeah, in my experience, when people come to your gym or you're at a gym, they don't really talk about their training. They talk about, like, more just the way the gym makes them feel.
Yeah.
Hey, it's awesome. The coaches are so nice and, like, the people there are cool.
Yeah.
You know, kind of, regardless if we were doing, like, powerlifting, bodybuilding, CrossFit, or running around the treadmills, they don't tend to mention the training very much. And then when someone, like, pursues them on it, like, oh, what sort of training is it? It's like, oh, it's a whole mix, a bit like CrossFit.
Yeah.
They're not going to describe in the way you've put the time and effort into it or the way you imagine they would explain it.
Yeah.
They just do it in, like, the simplest way possible and they use a label when they can.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the closest people get to accurately describing our training when they have a good stab at it is like, oh, you know, it's like they do like some heavy weights and cardio.
Yeah.
That's like honestly the most accurate description. Yeah. If they're like, oh, it's brutal hardcore CrossFit, I'll be like, oh, that's not what we do.
Yeah.
We've made a mistake here. But, you know, I think I can't remember exactly where I read it. I think it was in Seth Godin's book. And he said, your business is not what you say about your business, but it's what your customers say about your business. And I think that's definitely one thing that owners of businesses get way too focused on, is they have an idea in their head of what their business is and how it comes off to people and what it's described as. And it is a completely different business in the mind of their customers. Like, you might be focused, we do the most periodized, correct scientific-based strength training, and your members are all describing it as like, yeah, it's just like the funnest place
ever.
You
ask the member, they're like, no, I don't get my period. You're like, no, the periods of the training program. Yeah. They're like, I have no idea what's a period?
Yeah, they don't know that stuff. So I think that a lot of business owners could benefit tons from what you're doing at the moment, Raph, which is, interviewing some of your clients and be like, how do you describe this business? What is what we do here? Now, obviously, for some things, it's way more obvious, right? If you buy a car, it's like, oh, you know, I have a Hyundai. It's like a silver car that goes sort of fast and is reliable. But for services, especially gyms, that interpretation is, I would say, in 90% of cases, what's in the owner's head and what's in the customer's head is very different. And learning what is in the customer's head is really what your business is. And that's what you should focus on.
Same for a PT, right? PT is probably fascinated on how people describe the PT or why they actually end up going to them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Probably not much to do with the training.
No, it's the person 3 times a week that I get to share my life with and get advice from and have a sounding board because I don't have it anywhere else. PTs, I would say quite honestly, are much closer to therapists than they'd like to admit.
I'll tell you an interesting one because our coach Sean Grilly was telling us about, I don't get his name, he knew him and now this guy has gone and become Tony Robbins' personal trainer.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And I want to get him on the show and I was researching him and I was looking at, this guy was asking about an interview, like, what do you do for Tony, like, to get him ready? So it is the most unbelievable PT service I've ever heard.
Right.
He, like, gets up before him and, like, wakes him up with, like, massage. Like, first thing he does is, like, start massage. Like, the first thing I do, like, as he wakes up is, like, loosen up his stiff joints, like, get him in for training. And then it's like, dude, it's crazy. It's like, I hadn't heard of so much of this.
Wait,
like,
does he climb into bed with Tony and start rubbing his shoulders?
I didn't get the details, but he also trains blankets? His wife, apparently. So maybe
that's what he does go in the bike.
And then it's like, we do tests immediately upon waking. And then I like organize what nutrients I'm going to give him, like based off those tests straight away.
Right.
And it's like some adrenal fatigue or some this thing, that thing. And then it's like, from there, it's like, we go straight into a cryo. Cause like everywhere we go, we have to have a cryo chamber, like the freezing cold one. Anyway, it's the most outrageous PT routine I've ever heard.
Yeah. It sounds like he gets paid a lot. That's for sure.
Well, he has one client. So
is that it? We've got one more?
One more. MCV Jazz. Hey legends, my question this week, is it better to have a consistent bedtime and wake up time for sleep, even though it's short, or to have better to have a longer sleep with random times going to bed as per Whoop's recommendations? What are your thoughts?
I did talk about this a while back on some of the stuff we're talking about for Whoop. Because obviously with the Whoop band, it has a score, like a percentage of how many hours you need versus how many you got. And it gives you like, you know, you got 90% of the sleep you needed or 70% of the sleep you needed or whatever. So I started experimenting because for the longest time, you know, I had decided that staying on a rhythm with the sun was the best cadence for, you know, for feeling optimal after my sleep. So, for example, you know, if I went to bed somewhere between 9:30 and 10 every single night, I would stick to that as closely as I can, no matter what. And same goes for waking up. You know, if I wake up at between 6:30 and 7, I try and stick to that no matter what. So, if I went to bed at midnight for whatever reason, maybe I was out at dinner and then, you know, I wanted to miss, maybe I needed 8 hours sleep. Obviously, do the maths. That means I'm going to have to get up at like 8:30. Mm. But I would stick to 6:30 because that was the normal time I got up. Now, that is what we'd been told for a long time was the most effective way to sleep. And I'm not saying it's still not true for a lot of people. Like we're talking about with the carnivore stuff, individualization is a big part of this stuff. So for me, I find that getting the sleep is more important. Now, there is a caveat to that. So I definitely think breaking those common bedtime rules is important to get that sleep. But I think you can only do that 1 to 2 nights a week. If you did that every night, so if you needed 8 hours sleep every night, but you were all over the shop, you were in bed at 11 and then up at 7, or you're in bed at midnight, then you're up at 8, or you're in bed at 7, then you're up at, what's the maths on that? I don't know, 3 a.m., 4 a.m. or whatever. I don't think it works. I don't think it works. I think that that's when the rule goes out the window. But I think if people need to sleep in past their normal get out of bedtime to make up hours of sleep twice a week, once a week, think it's definitely more worthwhile than being like really, really strict and really diligent on sticking to those sleep and wake up times.
I think getting up at the same time, I get the best recovery scores when I get up at the same time for like a number of like a while in a row, like a week plus in a row. But I definitely think there's limits to the rule. Yeah. So if I'm gonna miss like an hour and a half sleep, I think it's better if I just get up at the same time I always do. Because it's just like one later night and you can catch up with a nap or whatever the next day. But I don't think that rule goes forever. Like, once you get down to, like, I'm only going to get 4 hours sleep now.
Right.
I definitely think it's better sleeping in a bit. Maybe not, like, the whole 8 hours, but at least getting to, like, you know, three hour and a half sleep cycles. Like, if you get up at six every day and one day you got to go to bed at three, I just don't think you're going to feel the best if you get up at six.
Yeah.
I think at least sleeping in until, like, 8 or 9 for that one day is going to be slightly better. You're probably going to feel pretty average regardless. So, I think it's a middle ground. It's like, hey, the more you can stick to the good wake-up hour, it is better. But if it means like getting 4 hours sleep, it's probably better if you can sleep in a little
bit. Yeah. The minimum most people need is 6.
Yeah.
So I think if you, you got to do whatever you can to get 6.
Yeah, that's what I think.
Like, it doesn't really 100%. Matter like when you went to bed or wake up. Yeah.
Okay.
No, that's good.
Good question.
We're going to talk about one of the Netflix documentaries. But before we do, we're going to speak about our nutrition coaching.
Yep.
So I actually, unfortunately, missed the check-in this week. I was a little bit disappointed by it. Yeah, I was away. Came up, I was so exhausted. I just didn't have the energy to check in on my phone, take the photos and the measurements and stuff. But I will say that the changes I've made, I talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the changes I made have been amazing because really the thing I was struggling with the most was my energy. My energy was just so up and down. And he thought it had a lot to do with, because he'd increased my carbs, I was trying to get heaps of extra carbs in during the day and it was just making my blood sugar rise and crash. And so we kept carbs only around training time so that we used them in the session and then used them to refuel after the session. And since then, it's been significantly better. Yeah, I feel much better, much more even energy throughout the day. I don't need as naps as much. It's not like I go zero carb, but I've definitely limited.
So your total carbs are the same?
I would say they're a little bit lower. Mm. I am finding it hard to eat that many carbs, but at night I do, right before bed, I try and eat a lot of carbohydrates as well. And yeah, I've been feeling much better through my coaching. So have you noticed many improvements?
Yeah, well, I talked about this last week. I probably didn't quite realize how off track it had, my nutrition had got a bit, just like over time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd lost a bit of weight from where I was at, but got it back up now. So I got all the way down to 82, which I think is just like a bit lighter than I've been for ages. Used to always be 85. So just like more consciously putting effort into my diet. I think I mentioned last time, I lost like half an inch on my waist and I'm back up now. Now I'm pretty much like 84 every morning.
Okay.
And the biggest one, like I'm always pretty good with protein, but over time I realized my protein had got a bit lower, my fat had got a little bit higher, and it just my diet wasn't as good as it used to be, and now it's more consistent.
Yeah, for sure. All right, well, if you guys are interested in nutrition coaching, then if you go to workingagainstgravity.com, use the code offer, no, sorry, if you use the code MMP50, you're going to get $50 off your first month. So if you're thinking about nutrition coaching, definitely jump on board, workingagainstgravity.com, and then the code MMP50. Yep. It's going to get you $50 off that first month. And the link to this deal is in the description of this episode, as always.
All right. We have a Netflix documentary. Locke and I have both watched it, and it is called Pandemic, How to Prevent an Outbreak.
Mm.
Now, I will start us off with something I find quite humorous, is there was like this big online conspiracy going on that the coronavirus was a massive PR stunt to promote the Netflix series.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, I heard a few
like
different...
Like, greatest PR stunt of all time, people were saying.
Man, I actually heard some different conspiracy theories about it as well, is that it had already been around for a very long time.
Coronavirus?
Right, yeah. So, they had it in their labs in China.
Yep.
Like, you know, they have all the Ebolas shit, like, in storage, right? But their theory was that because China doesn't regulate their rules around lab protocols and stuff are not as strict as the Western world. It, like, got out and they just, like, didn't really look after it, and it just spread, and they just tried to be like, oh, no, it's all good, and try and contain it. And it got a lot of people. I'll tell you what, traveling internationally last weekend, the virus is, like, real. Like, you don't really feel it when you're obviously just in your day-to-day life, but when you go to an airport, everything is there. Every single screen, every single, like, poster, every notification is, like, coronavirus, like, if you've been to mainland China in the last 14 days, like, please report to this area. Every single person, like, had a mask in the Australian airport. In the New Zealand airport, it was maybe, like, 1 in 10. But at the Australian airport, it was, like, 9 in 10 people had a mask. Everyone was wearing a mask. But I will say this about the masks. I actually heard that the masks, like, just the really basic ones, just a piece of cloth over your mouth, is actually worse because bacteria thrive in warm, damp environments. And it will attach itself to the mask and get into the mask. So, you need like a proper like filtration mask, like a real...
Like a Bane from...
not that hectic. I think you get arrested if you have something like that on. But it's more like it's a P1, P2 particle filter or something like that. They wear them for the asbestos.
Yep.
You can get them from Bunnings, but they're a bit more of a hectic mask. But I think just the regular face covering doesn't actually serve that good of a purpose if you want. But the biggest thing you can do for these sorts of viruses is just wash your hands.
Mm.
It's when you touch it and then you put your hands on your face is the worst. So, washing your hands regularly is like the biggest one for prevention.
Not going to China.
Also, and breathing through your nose, I reckon. A lot of people that mouth breathe, like, there's no filtering system there.
That's good though. We want to get rid of those people anyway. I don't know if you remember with the SARS virus. They mentioned this in the documentary. But you remember SARS? The SARS virus. So that's only affected CrossFitters. The SARS. The SARS virus. When it actually hit, I was in Asia, and I came back from Asia from the SARS virus. And
this is 2005?
Yeah, about 2000. No, no. Early. I think about 2000. I think I was in year 7, so I think it was 2003. Okay. And I maybe 2000, maybe year 8. One Qantas flight attendant actually got it, and she got quarantined. And then I was actually on the flight that she was taking back from Asia.
Oh, no.
So, they, like, called us up, and they were like, hey, you're on, like, standby. And if she, like, whatever, has this whole thing, we're going to come get you and put you into quarantine.
Oh, wow.
And I had to, like, leave school. And then, whatever, turned out she, like, didn't actually have it, and we didn't get quarantined.
Yeah.
But that's the closest I've ever been to being in the middle of a pandemic.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the series. So, it's, like, hour or 45-minute long episodes. It's just one season, and there's about 7 of them here. And it has some pretty solid ratings online. You watched the first episode?
I did, yeah.
I watched the 5th episode. I watched the 5th one because it was more around the anti-vaxxers and stuff. It was mostly around, like, vaccinations. And with the baby off, I've been looking into the vaccinations quite a bit, and it was more around that stuff.
Was that interesting for you?
Yeah, it was interesting. It didn't paint the anti-vaxxing population in a good light, that's for sure.
Really?
Well, it's tough. Like, these, you know, a lot of these parents have kids that, you know, they have this, like, open hearing because they were banning kids who aren't vaccinated from, like, schools and everything. Like banning them from coming altogether.
Yeah.
And they were, like, kind of giving these arguments for it. And these other people were coming in, like, hey, like, my kid has cancer and he goes to school and they are so susceptible to getting something like measles. If a kid has, like, cancer and he's on...
Yeah, weakened immune system.
If they get measles, they have a 27% chance of dying.
Fuck.
Getting measles. And measles is, like, hugely on the rise because of people locking vaccinations. And these parents are like, hey, like, I get that, you know, you can still school your kid from home. But this is, like, a choice you're making, and it's, like, crazy, like, kids are dying because of it. So, in this documentary, like, painted them in a very poor light.
Yeah. Well, in the first episode that I watched, it did really talk about the likelihood of an outbreak and the damage it can cause. And, you know, the reality is that it's coming. Like, it's not a matter of when. It's not about if, it's a matter of when. And so, obviously, we just have, like, really high-level scientists just, like, working around the clock. But the big thing that whole first episode is like, there is a team of scientists and researchers trying to find, like, a cure for all flu strains. So, like, the coronavirus is just like a different strain of the flu, and they're trying to work on like a global vaccination for the flu strain. Yep. So you can just like inject it, and no one ever gets any strain of the flu ever again. So I feel like we're far off something like that. So it'd be pretty cool when we do. But these documentaries are fascinating. They're awesome. I highly recommend people watch them. And this one's done really well. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5.
Are there any actions that you could take away from your episode that decrease your chance of getting a virus, or it's no?
Not really.
Not in mind.
No, not really. No.
Besides vaccinating, none of mine.
I mean, you always just be as healthy as possible, right?
Yeah.
Eat healthy, like, train, be resilient. Having the strongest immune system is going to give you the best chance.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I'd really recommend it, because it does seem like this, and like, I don't know, maybe nuclear war, it does seem like probably the most likely chances will really fuck it up.
Yeah.
So I'd probably recommend this as like a 3.5.
Okay. Cool. All right, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Obviously, I mentioned a few different sponsors. All the links to those sponsors are in the description of this episode. We're very excited for the new programs to come out as well. But for this week, thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll speak to you next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.